In 1930, Charles Francis Potter authored Humanism, a New Religion, in which he boasted, "Education is thus a most powerful ally of humanism, and every American public school is a school of humanism." What can the theistic Sunday school meeting for an hour once a week and teaching only a fraction of the children do to stem the tide of a five-day program of humanistic teaching? That's what we're going to talk about today. My name is Dave Wilson, and if this stuff works here, this is a special edition of Radio Liberty. Thank you so much for joining us today. I have to remind you, of course, that the views expressed on this live radio program are not the views of the station that you might be listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests. And we want you to be a participant. Later on, we're going to be opening up the phone lines, talking with Dr. Dennis Cuddy, a very good friend of this ministry, Radio Liberty. Dr. Cuddy lives out there in the East Coast and is an expert on all things educational. And we have him, quite a choice conversation today. Dr. Cuddy, good afternoon. How are you today?
Oh, thanks for having me. How are you doing?
I'm doing just fine. I just wanted to thank you so much for stepping up to the plate here in Dr. Stan's absence. He's doing very well. We still need to pray for his protection and provision, but things are going better and better. And in the meantime, as I sit here, as I'm privileged to sit in here, I wonder, all of the things that are going on in this world seem to be getting more and more interconnected. And the quote that I read from your recent essay on News with Views entitled America's New Religion talks about humanism as a religion. And I'd like to talk with that about that with you this afternoon, if we could. What exactly did you mean? A religion is something that has to do with the God of the Bible, isn't it?
Oh, no. You have various religions that don't have to do with God. I mean, Buddhism would not really recognize the God of the Bible, but even beyond that, you have the U.S. Supreme Court declaring early in the 1960s when it listed religions, it listed secular humanism as a non-theistic, meaning not including God, a religion. Mm-hmm. So there's all types of religions, and they don't have to necessarily have God, and the God of the Bible, involved.
And humanism, according to the dictionary that I read this afternoon, says is any system or mode of thought or action in which human interests, values, and dignity predominate, or perhaps a variety of ethical theory and practice that emphasize reason, scientific inquiry, and human fulfillment in the natural world. And then this little caveat, and often rejects the importance of belief in God. Do you find that to be true as we examine humanism in the 21st century?
In the 21st century, sure. Even in the 20th century, there were three. There's usually people refer to the two main humanist manifestos, one in the first one, 1933, and the second one, 1973, but there was also one in the 1990s that's lesser known. The one in 1933 was sort of general, but you basically got the idea what they were up to. In 1973, they really came out even more explicitly, and there's a lot of signers, S-I-G-N-E-R-S, prominent names. Mm-hmm. Sir Julian Huxley and many others would be signing these humanist manifestos, saying that's what basically we believe in. And one of the lead people, even in the first one, was John Dewey, who's the father of progressive education in this country. If you go to just about any school and ask a teacher, are you a progressive educator, and what do you think of John Dewey? Most of them would probably say, oh, yes, I consider myself very progressive, and John Dewey was a wonderful man.
Somewhat of a hero. We're going to be joined by our other audience now on the local station here in the Monterey Bay area, and we're going to be left with our Internet audience for a few seconds. So we'll be doing some reintroductions right now. And right now, ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to welcome Dr. Dennis Cuddy with me today. My name is Dave Wilson. We're doing a special edition once again of Radio Liberty. I'd like to welcome all of those of you who are listening in the Monterey Bay Area of the Central California coast. Our telephone number later on in the program is going to be 464-8295 or 888-24-LIBERTY. That's 888-245-4237. So write those down as we're talking with Dr. Dennis Cuddy discussing America's New Religion. And Dr. Cuddy believes, and I believe, and you probably believe as well, that America's new religion is secular humanism. In fact, the program Bill O'Reilly, what do you call it, the O'Reilly Factor or something like that, talks about secular progressives all the time. Is this kind of related, Dr. Cuddy, in your estimation?
It can be. One has to actually ask an individual if they're describing themselves in particular terms, because their progressive can have many, many different meanings. Around the turn of the century, between the 1800s and 1900s, there was a populist movement, there was a progressive movement,
mm-hmm.
and it can mean just we believe in progress, that progress is good. But in the sense of John Dewey, when he was talking about progress, he literally was very much enamored of the Bolsheviks. He went over there in the 1920s and came back and wrote a series of articles for the New Republic magazine, and one in particular I refer to is December 5 of 1928, where he was saying the Bolsheviks over there in the Soviet Union were just wonderful. They were, you know, they were undermining the church, and they were undermining the family, and he thought this was just great. Because from a educational psychology point of view, which is what Dewey was, this was all just one grand experiment. And Dewey thought that we would have socialism. He said, you know, we may call it by some other name, but basically America was in for some kind of socialism. And he said that in a book the next year, 1929. It was called Individualism Old and New. And he, as I said, was a signer of the first Humanist Manifesto in 1933. And immediately after that, 1934, he wrote a book called A Common Faith, where he literally explained how religions such as Christianity that had dogmatic beliefs, moral absolutes, they would have to surrender, because what we were going to do, through the schools mainly, was to develop some sort of set of beliefs or ethic, philosophy, that we can all agree on.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you see, there wouldn't be any more wars and disagreements. We'd all have this common faith or a common set of values, and there wouldn't be any disagreements, and everything would be just fine. And that's what he said. And the socialism was sort of a compromise between capitalism on the one hand and communism on the other hand.
And Karl Marx started it even back in the 19th century, in 1844. Do you believe that Mr. Marx, if you want to give him that much credit, was the father of all this kind of thinking, or does it go even further back than that?
Well, if I hear the music,
go ahead. We're fine.
Okay. Well, Marx, in 1844, said communism, and he was calling it communism at the time. This is even before his manifesto, you see. The manifesto wasn't until 1848. He said, communism begins from the outset with atheism. Communism is fully developed. Naturalism equals humanism. And that's why I put on there a chart in the article. You have a link to a chart, a naturalism chart, New Age chart, that your listeners can go to newswithviews.com, and they can look at my articles. And in this case, you will find a link right there to a New Age chart that my mother developed, and she traces it all the way from naturalism at its root, which biblically, of course, it goes back to Lucifer right there in the Garden of Eden, where he's tempting Eve.
Right, and I have it in my hand right here, and it's an absolutely astounding compilation of information. And ladies and gentlemen, the URL for that to begin with is www.erwm.com, but you can get to it much easier if you go to News with Views and highlight Dr. Cuddy's articles and then look at the article America's New Religion, and you'll find it there. It's well worth your downloading. Continue on, please, Dr. Cuddy.
Okay, so you could say in a way that in a modern sense, Marx was the sort of founder of this, because he predated Dewey. Of course, he predates another individual, Auguste Comte, who was largely responsible for what's called, he called his system of positive polity. He would call it a positivism. Sounds very positive, you know, like sort of progressive. But basically what that was is the attitude that man will decide for himself what's best, what's right or wrong. And at first, it was largely adopted in our legal or judicial system. You'd have at the early part of the 20th century, Felix Frankfurter and Oliver Wendell Holmes and the justices on the Supreme Court having that sort of attitude. And what they meant was, well, the Constitution, which they're supposed to, you know, interpret, means whatever I say it means. Mm-hmm. And so you started having this language that is a living, breathing document, you know, that is subject to revision. Of course, that's anything but what a strict constructionist would say. There's a specific process if you want to change the Constitution through adoption of amendments and so on. But these people decided, well, you know, I'll just say it means whatever. And so through that process, the courts started to undermine value systems or religion. There's various decisions, Everson decision in the late 40s. They started throwing in the sort of separation of church and state notion then, which came to a full bore in the early 60s, where they literally kicked God out of the schools, mm-hmm. and kicked Bible reading and school prayer out. So you could say it began with Marx, but if you look at the words Marx is using, such as naturalism and things, they really do go way back. You can go back to the Enlightenment, as your dictionary said, where what they were doing, the Enlightenment scholars, as they call themselves, said, well, reason, you know, will be supreme, and scientific knowledge, and we don't need to rely on faith and the Bible so much anymore. A lot of them originally were Christians, but they started this shift, and pretty soon the secularists took it over. And so the whole movement will predate Marx, but here you literally have Marx using that word humanism.
Let me tell you one thing. In Genesis 3:1, if you want to go back a long way, it says, now the serpent was more cunning than any beast of the field,
right,
which the Lord God had made. And he said to the woman, hath God indeed said, you shall not eat of every tree of the garden? And the woman said to the serpent, we can eat of the fruit of the trees of the garden, but of the fruit of the tree which is in the midst of the garden, God has said, you shall not eat it, nor shall you touch it, lest you die. Verse 4, then the serpent said to the woman, you will surely not die, for God knows in that day that you eat of it, your eyes will be opened, and you will be like God, knowing good and evil. And I surmise that was really the beginning of this whole thing, where we really kind of think that the center of the universe is our own navel sometimes, you know?
Right, and if you add to that, you can actually call what you were just writing, reading, the first values clarification education technique, because that's what Lucifer was doing, and that's what humanists, secular humanists especially, do in the schools. It's not just that they have a particular viewpoint. They have a process for getting it across, and it involves values clarification. So Lucifer was really, quote, clarifying Eve's values for her there. And what they do is sort of, it's like Socrates. These people, Socrates, of course, you know, the Greek philosopher, people would say, oh, well, he just asked questions. And the teachers here today are just asking, you know, Johnny and Janie questions like, Johnny, you do believe that honesty is the best policy, don't you, and so on. But Socrates didn't just ask a bunch of random questions. He had a conclusion in mind all along, and so the series of questions he was asking were to gradually lead that student to the conclusion that Socrates wanted him to have.
Uh-huh.
And so that's what Lucifer is doing back there in the Garden of Eden. That's what a lot of teachers are doing today. Yes, they are asking certain questions, but they are leading the student in a particular direction. It's not just, you know, random questions they're asking.
We're trying to get consensus because people don't want to feel bad if they don't have the right idea at first. They want to be led along that garden path so that we can all agree what truth is, right?
Yeah, the Garden of Eden path, yeah.
I curiously got a thing across the internet today from the Berean Call. It says, the current scientific establishment and education system are not willing to open up discussion for fear that the human mind will come to conclusions that are contrary to evolution. The results of excluding other ideas will be that we produce a nation of non-thinkers. It behooves us to encourage honest and open inquiry in the science classroom so that scientific inquiry reaches the potential it aspires to, that of observing the world around us and searching for answers. And we see in the global warming thing that's going on now that some people are trying to draw us into a consensus that the world is going to suddenly catch fire. Dr. Cuddy, in your opinion, why is so much of the humanistic thought around evolution and nature and science and so forth, as opposed to philosophy and reason. Is there a reason for that? You know what
I mean?
Well,
yeah, there is. It's a Julian Huxley, whom I mentioned before, basically said at the heart of this matter was evolution in terms of humanism. And if you go back even further, I didn't include this quote, but a lot of the early proponents knew exactly what was going on. But what they wanted to do was be their own God, as you said, mm-hmm. and as Lucifer was saying there in Genesis. And it especially had to do with things like sexual morality. They wanted literally to be able to do their own thing, and they didn't want any judgmental God telling them they couldn't. And so they dressed it up, you know, in scientific knowledge and, you know, evolution. Don't you see how all of these animals and people have feet? Well, obviously they evolve. Well, you know, if you have gravity, you better have something to stand on. So the feet are, you know, whether it's 4 feet, 2 feet, whatever, 6 feet, you know, centipedes, whatever. It really is irrelevant. But they would use those excuses because they, as I said, had a particular ultimate objective in mind. The Illuminati, same thing. They not only wanted to, in the late 1700s, to undermine monarchical kings and queens, their authority, but religious authority. You just simply could not have a god telling me whether I could fornicate or not, or whatever. And so it's literally been a battle ever since those days, the days of the French Revolution, which was infiltrated by members of the Illuminati through the Parisian Outlaws League after the Illuminati dispersed. It's been a battle between the American Revolution values, biblical principles largely, mm-hmm. and the French Revolution values, which were secular humanist values, sort of do your own thing. That's what Adam Weishaupt of the Illuminati said, do what thou wilt. You make up your own mind what's right or wrong for you, and that's what the public schools have been doing for about the last 40, 50 years, ever since the early 60s when the Supreme Court rendered its decision. They've been telling Johnny and Janie through values clarification that you make up your own mind. You're an autonomous moral decision maker. You decide for yourself what's right or wrong based on the situation. And unfortunately, that is the title of my article, America's New Religion. That's what most Americans now, not so much older Americans, but those, say, under 50, actually believe in.
Mm-hmm. People's values are shaped by the media that they watch and the music that they hear, you write. And that's really true. It's getting more and more difficult as the days go by to get people to give any kind of effort towards educating themselves. This is a huge trend, I think, that television has really done a number on humankind, if you will, from the 50s. We're down to the point now where if we have our remote control and a six-pack of Budweiser, we're in for the evening. It's a scary thing, and I don't know whether we can turn this around. This is a question that often is asked towards the end of a program, but do you see hope for a reversal of this trend?
To be perfectly candid, not much. Mm-hmm. There always is hope. We're all responsible for doing the best we can right now, today. We need to be realists. And if we believe in the Bible, there will be an Antichrist. So even if we turn everything around tomorrow, at some point in the future, things are going to get messed up again if there's an Antichrist. But that should not dissuade us. All we're responsible for is being, as Ezekiel said, watchmen on the wall and warning people. We can't actually force them. I mean, Jesus Christ didn't force them. Mm-hmm. To believe as he said they should. It was their free will choice, which God's given us. But what you have isn't just the belief itself. It's sort of a process which they control. And so it's not just like I can just go out and explain to people why this is good and so forth. Oh, they'll say, oh, yes, I see. Well, let's all turn around and do what's right. It doesn't work. It's not that simple because the Lucifer, ultimately, Dr. Stan often says there's a spiritual element to this.
Of course.
Is literally guiding the process. And what you mentioned earlier about evolution is a good point.
We'll have to come back to that point because all of our audiences are going away for us right now for a couple of minutes. And just you and I are talking right now with the people on the World Wide Web, and that's the audience that I'd like to reach with this first little bit of a query about, since, ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Radio Liberty over the web, I'd like to know if you feel a responsibility to help us here. You know, all the time when I say, what's your part in this battle to turn this way of thinking around? One of the easy ways that you can do it, of course, is to support the underwriting of the cost of putting these programs on radio. And it costs money as well to put Radio Liberty and all the other programs that Dr. Stan is responsible for up on the web. You might want to seriously consider taking it to prayer and seeing if $25 a month or more might be something that you could afford to make sure that your part in the battle is something that's significant. There are thousands of people who have joined Radio Liberty as members of the Radio Liberty family of supporters, and I'd like to convince you that perhaps it's something you need to pray about as well. If you don't think you know enough about Radio Liberty to take it to prayer, why don't you give a call at 800-544-8927 and ask for a copy of the Radio Liberty information packet. And there you'll get a catalog of all the audio and the DVDs and books and such that Dr. Stan and his associates have put together for your edification. Just reading the Index of Authors alone is an education. And, of course, all the stations that Radio Liberty appears on is there for your perusal. All kinds of interesting things, and perhaps most importantly, how you can become a member of the Radio Liberty family. It's important that you take up a part of the battle, and I think that once you do, you'll feel pretty good about it. Now, I have to admit that it's not a tax-deductible donation that you'd be sending to Radio Liberty, because we want to try to stay as free and clear of government supervision as we possibly can. So there's no 501c3 here. It's simply your stepping alongside of Dr. Stan and a host of other people who have decided that the truth in America is something that we're not hearing very often, except on programs like Radio Liberty with Dr. Stanley Monteith. I'd like to remind you, of course, to keep Dr. Stan in your prayers for provision and for his protection as he's doing what he needs to do right now. There is a good sign that he'll probably be back here next week. We hope so. And keep him in your prayers on a daily basis so that he might regain his strength and continue in the trip that he's on right now. We're talking with Dr. Dennis Cuddy. And Dr. Cuddy is a longtime friend of the ministry here. Dr. Cuddy is, of course, a PhD-level the word escaped me there. Well, you have your doctorate from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, and you've been involved in this battle for an awfully long time. You've taught at the university. You've been working for an international consulting firm. You've been a senior associate with the U.S. Department of Education, all kinds of things which have eminently qualified you. And I think probably you've broken away a little bit from that sort of thing and are now part and parcel of this battle that we seem to be waging here at Radio Liberty and some of the other programs that are like this. And I thank you, Dr. Cuddy, for joining us. I thank you for all of your research. I thank you for those essays that you put up with at News with Views. And, ladies and gentlemen, I'd like for you to go there at newswithviews.com and enter and see what Dr. Cuddy's essays are all about. And we're back. Everybody is back now, and we're talking with Dr. Dennis Cuddy. We're talking about the fact that the secular humanists, if you will, or the humanists in general, are controlling process. And when you say that they're controlling process, Dr. Cuddy, exactly what do you mean by that?
Well, there's a couple of things. When you had mentioned earlier in the program about evolution, they literally turned that on its head. They would start off with saying, well, do we need this science and reason and so on? But then when the evidence starts going against them, when people start asking very hard questions, such as, well, scientifically, how did the eye, something as complicated as the eye or DNA, just happen to evolve, you know, sheer random chance, and they have no answer to that, then they actually play sort of a role reversal, because what we've done is we've caught them in a matter of faith. It takes more faith to believe in evolution than it does to believe in God. There's all sorts of evidence we see all over the place, empirical evidence, which means observable evidence, that there is a God. Most of our life is spent, whether we realize it or not, based on probability statistics. And now your listeners probably said, what? I'm doing what? Well, yeah, the reason you walk across the room is because you learned at an early age that you can put one foot in front of the other and not fall down and something horrible not happen to you. Now, you don't every time you take a step go through that process, but you've learned that. That's the reason why you walk across a room, but you don't walk into the middle of a highway at midnight blindfolded, because the probability is very great something bad will happen to you. And so, for example, in evolution, scientifically and logically, most of these intellectuals, as they call themselves, and they claim to be scientists who believe in evolution, they would never open up the back of a watch and look at all the complicated gears and then say something like, my goodness, look what happened when a big wind blew through a scrap metal pile, because that would be stupid. The probability is that that was made by some intelligent person. But when it comes to applying that to the world, like how did the eye come about? How did DNA come about? They do a role reversal. They say, well, no, don't pay attention to that. You know, don't look at that, because that would obviously lead towards a designer, a creator, God. And so it's sort of, like I said, a role reversal. And so what they've done is this process that I was talking about, what they do is they unfreeze the child's values, they change it, and then they refreeze it. All in the name of independence. You'll find them in school saying, oh, you're an intelligent person. You go into the advanced class. You do want to be an intellectual inquirer, right? You don't want to just take things and just memorize a bunch of things. You want to engage in critical thinking and so on. There's all kinds of these little code words, and what it basically means is you're going to challenge authority. And in their case, they do not want you to challenge them and, let's say, evolution. But they do want you to challenge the values that you're being taught at home. And so that's why it was important to get rid of Bible reading and school prayer, but not just that. What the process does is they continue to teach values, but now while the parents are at home saying the God of the Bible is the moral authority, my child, for deciding what's right or wrong, in school there is a different moral authority. It's not God. You can go into any school you want. And the teacher, if they're teaching a class in character education about honesty, whatever, will never say, God says don't do such and such, and so therefore you shouldn't. They'll never do that. What they do is this Socratic questioning. Now, it's dressed up. It's supposed to be leading the student towards the conclusion that honesty is the best policy. But at the very root, and this is, you know, Lucifer in the Garden of Eden, at the very root, what happens is the student is taught that he is his own God. They don't say that. The teacher doesn't say, okay, Johnny, you're now your own God. But that's what it boils down to, because Johnny is always left with the impression that I have to decide what's right or wrong for me based on the situation. Situation ethics through a process of values clarification. That's what secular humanism does.
You know, years ago, I can recall hearing people say, well, I don't want to instruct my child in any particular religion. I want him to have the benefit of choosing his own religion, like I did. And it sounds so wonderful.
Sure.
Oh, gosh, that's so open-minded of you. What a great parent to encourage their child to investigate things. But they'll soon find out that the kind of investigation that they're allowed to do will lead them to this other religion, the one of secular humanism and socialism. And when we come back from this break, Dr. Cuddy, we're going to talk about the fact of a little bit of socialism in this country, if you don't mind, and how it's encroaching upon us day by day. And also I'd like to touch upon something that is probably germane to what we've been talking about, is why is there an open season on Christians? And we'll be talking about those things as we come back after the break at the bottom of the hour. Now, don't you dare go away. My name's Dave Wilson, and we'll be back in just a moment. It's so important that we do understand what's going on in the world, and when Dr. Cuddy is willing to come aboard and talk about these things, I'd like for you to be able to know where you can find out about more of the different things that he has written. One of the best places, of course, is to get a copy of the Radio Liberty Resource List by calling 800-544-8927. and asking that person who answers the phone there to send you a copy of the Radio Liberty Resource List. Now, that's going to be free and postpaid to your door, and we're not going to add your name and address to any kind of list where we'll be dunning you for donations to this cause or the other thing. We simply want to get the word out that there are things going on in these United States today that perhaps are coming in under the radar, so to speak. And you need to be educated. You need to educate yourself about all this so that you can see it. Now, you don't have to become an expert in all of the fields, but I'm sure as you peruse through this list of things that are going on, that you'll see something there that piques your interest. And you'll want to gather some of the data that will help you educate your friends in the course of your conversation. So once again, call 800-544-8927 or go to www.radioliberty. There's a lot of good information there. Also, you can write us at Radio Liberty, Post Office Box 969, Soquel, California. That's spelled S-O-Q-U-E-L, California, 95073. That's Radio Liberty, Post Office Box 969, Soquel, California, 95073. The number to call, 800-544-8927, and ask for a copy of that Radio Liberty Resource List. It's probably the simplest thing you can do. It will be the one of the better things that you've done. I don't know what the hours are down there, but probably 24 hours a day. 800-544-8927. And don't forget also that your support of this ministry helps keep Radio Liberty on the air. If you want to, you can join and become a member of the Radio Liberty family of supporters, and in response to your donation, we'll send you the best tapes of the month. You can elect pretty much to get one or four, I think, and as you listen to these tapes or CDs, you can spread the word even further about what's truly going on in the world today. We're going to be joined now by all the rest of our network affiliates. And we're going to continue our discussion with Dr. Dennis Cuddy. And ladies and gentlemen, let's open the phone lines now at 464-8295, 888-24-LIBERTY or 888-245-4237 and see if we can't continue this discussion. Hi, everybody. We're back with Dr. Dennis Cuddy, and the phone lines are now open at 464-8295 here in the Monterey Bay area. That's an area code 831. But wherever you may be able to listen to this program, we'll pay for the call at 888-24-LIBERTY, and that's actually what we are here, is two people working for Liberty. That's 888-245-4237 if you have a question for Dr. Cuddy. We were talking before the break about why the process has been going on. They take our children at age four or even earlier. There's, you know, some support now for getting your children even at an earlier age so that people can go out and work to pay their taxes. And that's another thread that we could examine, I suppose. And the state wants to grab a hold of your child's mind as early as possible. What do you think about this idea, Dr. Cuddy, of state-sponsored schools beginning at age three or four? They've been really pressed on because you can't earn a living anymore, just one person, and the mom staying home, can you?
No, that's all by design. I have a book that Radio Liberty sells, The Road to Socialism, and in there, at the first of it, I put a quote by Friedrich Engels, who was Karl Marx's associate, saying that's one of their strategies. They wanted to break up the family. They would do that by getting the woman, the wife, to work outside the home, and that would free them up and cause more government daycare subsidies. So, and you would do that by inflation. You would raise the price of goods, and they would say, well, to make ends meet, both of us has to work, and so they go to work. Well, obviously the child's going to go to daycare. Then you set, let's say, regulations so that it really boils down to wiping out a lot of private daycare providers. They have to have government approval, government license, and the government wants certain things done or not done in these institutions. And so They have, like I said, it's the whole process. And they do this because the values they know are shaped very early. If they just wait till 5 or 6 years old, the youngster's values may already be formed. You know, the parents may have taught them biblical truth in those first 4 or 5 years, and they just they can't stand that. And so it's by design that they would do that. And one other thing, if the your listeners, I've been talking a lot in general terms, but as many of your listeners will know that my books like The Road to Socialism or Secret Records Revealed and some others, I'll be coming out with a new one on mental health and education and social control pretty soon. I use the quotes of the people themselves. So when I'm talking about these things, explaining it, your listeners need to remember that I'm not just saying these things. I use their words. I'll just give a few quickie examples here about what I've been saying. The Humanist magazine is pretty much a good source to find out what they're doing. And so after Bible reading school, prayer were kicked out, the 70s is when this thing really began full bore. I mean, it had been going on before, but it really launched then in the 70s. And you'd have the Humanist having an article in which one of the writers said, expressed her thankfulness that the crazies, they're the fundamentalists, who don't do all that much reading. If they did, they'd find out they'd already been defeated. The next issue, another humanist, Paul Blanchard, said the educational factor is most important in making this nation become secular, because through that we can get rid of all this religious superstition. The myths, M-Y-T-H-S, of history, like Adam and Eve, we'll get rid of that. Another common textbook all across the country in the early 70s was Perspectives in United States History, just a general textbook used all over the place. And in there it said, quote, the God of the Judeo-Christian tradition was a God worshipped by desert folk, clearly man created, end quote. In other words, we made God up. He's just, fiction. Then the next year, 77, you have Sidney Hook saying how they would get students to critically examine their own religious beliefs by indirection. Not a direct assault. The teacher wouldn't come and say, okay, down with the Bible, down with Christ. But what they would do is through, let's say, evolution, get them to start questioning anything that they couldn't, was outside of their reflective experience, what they saw themselves today. In other words, faith. They wanted to junk faith. And then there was also an H.J. Blackham. He was in the Humanist magazine. He was also a founder of the 4 million-member International Humanist and Ethical Union. I remember at the time Ted Koppelman, a lot of these people were examining this issue on TV, on Nightline. They say, what's a humanist? And it must be just a small little group. Oh, no. 4 million-member International Humanist and Ethical Union. And he said that if schools teach dependence, like moral dependence on oneself, quote, they are more revolutionary than any conspiracy to overthrow the government, end quote. And he was exactly right. And then there was a, lastly, there was a prize-winning essay in the Humanist magazine. It was by a John Dunphy. And he proclaimed that, quote, the battle for humankind's future must be waged and won in the public school classroom between the rotting corpse of Christianity and the new faith of humanism, and humanism will emerge triumphant, end quote. So those are just a few examples of how these people, in their own words, tell you exactly what they've been doing.
I find it insulting to read some of this stuff, and particularly, I find it even more insulting when I see some of it is true, particularly when you say the crazies, the fundamentalists, don't do all that much reading, and if they did, they'd find out they've already been defeated. Well, obviously, they don't know who's been defeated. At least at the end of the book, we know that we have overcome all through the power of Jesus Christ, and through the things that are going to happen between now and that time, we're told to stand fast to the liberty that we know to be the truth. We've got a visitor right here. Jeannie, how are you this afternoon?
Well, I'm just dandy. It's nice to hear your voice again, Dave.
Well, thank you so much. Do you have a question or comment for Dr. Cuddy?
I have a question for Dr. Cuddy, and I think he's the right man. It's been bothering me as a researcher. The NAFTA superhighways, I've seen them being built down in Central America where the gravel and the cement, very thick and very strong, these superhighways. And so my question, Dr. Cuddy, is the sustainable vulnerable villages are supposed to produce their own goods, their food, their fiber, their air, you name it. So what connection does the superhighways have to do with bringing goods to us when we will be separated into sustainable villages and making our own produce and so forth? Is there another reason for the NAFTA superhighways?
Yes and no. there's really two parts to that. There's two definitions they use for sustainable. Sustainable meaning replenishable. You're not wiping out, you know, whatever oxygen we have through the ozone layer. We're not depleting totally fossil fuel. That's sort of sustainable. Secondly, though, you're right in the sense that ideally they will say that sustainable means your own community produces certain things for its own use, and so therefore what do you need a superhighway for? What they're doing is playing a bait and switch in each of these cases, and it generally comes under the term communitarian. They're redefining things. They will say this is all communitarian, the sustaining community in itself. You have your little greenway, and you know you have your little potatoes over here in your garden and your backyard and so forth and so on. And they even have the educational system like that. They'll say school to work, and they'll have these little workforce development committees, and they'll promote in your local schools what industries your own area produces, you know, furniture, textiles, whatever it is. At the same time, however, their definition of communitarian involves the larger community, and that's why Hillary uses, like, the global village. So they ultimately see the whole globe as the community. And so what they do is they try to trick people by saying words like sustainable development in your community and so on and so on. But the enforcement mechanism is global. In other words, the UN treaties that we sign will tell you in your local community what you can and cannot do and what you shall and shall not produce. To be part of this, you know, NAFTA or some larger entity or eventually some world government. And so it's two things are going on. It's a bait and switch. They do have the NAFTA superhighway because we're supposed to be borderless. You know, immigrants will flow and goods will flow all up and down and so forth. And they really, in a logical sense, will contradict themselves. Often this stuff, like let's say the superhighway, comes out of a free trade. You know, well, we're for free trade. You are for free trade, aren't you, and so on and so on. And that's why we have to have the NAFTA superhighway. Well, if you think about it, something like NAFTA or the North American Union actually logically would hurt that effort at free trade. I mean, if you're locked into trade with Canada and the U.S. and Mexico for certain things, then you, by definition, can't, if you're the U.S., trade a certain product with Bolivia or wherever, you know, Romania if you want to. But they just use that technique to get people aboard. And the real question you should ask yourself is like the schools, you know, who's the moral authority? It's no longer God, it's something else. So in these cases, ultimately, it will be the power elite, the world government, the UN, you know, temporarily, who is dictating what you in your community will consider sustainable and therefore what you must produce. So they have two different definitions. Their definition, like Hillary's village of sustainability, is they on high will tell you in your community that you can only produce a certain amount of X, Y, and Z, because that will be needed for, you know, trade to, you know, Canada or some other country. Or sustainability could be that a cooperative relationship in terms of the larger community will mean that Canada and Mexico will share its oil sands with the U.S. and so on. So there's two different things going on. And the NAFTA superhighway is all part of that, but they don't want the people to know about it.
I have a quick question, Dr. Cuddy. Yeah. Can these NAFTA superhighways, you mentioned enforcement,
right,
can they be used for military and tanks to enforce whatever's coming down?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And this the way you see this is like in the European Union, they start with the European community and they deny it's anything more. And then they come along and say, well, yeah, it is, and so what? The fait accompli. And so what they do is they deny that it's being used for that purpose. And the first step is they ridicule, like George Bush and the other up in Montebello, in Canada when the Fox News reporter, Brett Baer, I think his name was, asked him about, is this part of a larger plan for a superhighway? And Bush, you know, ha, 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 it's all conspiracy. If I were the reporter, the next thing I would have asked him was, oh, okay, Mr. President, so this 10-lane, massive Trans-Texas corridor going from Mexico up to Oklahoma does what, Mr. President? It comes to a screeching halt at the Oklahoma border and everybody merges into a two-lane little dirt road? I don't think so. But that's what they do. They try and ridicule it. And then what happens is once that gets along, you know, as a means of trade, then what they also say, all of these relationships involve, quote, security. For example, the Center for Strategic and International Studies, as we speak, is concluding, they're supposed to send me a copy of their report, about 2025, that's the year, 2025. And what you will find is security is always part of that, not just trade security, right? So what I did in my globalist book was I put quotes from the Ottawa Citizen, you know, articles like that, where there have literally been proposals that we merge our military, that the Canadian, U.S., and Mexican military sort of merge. And of course, if we merge, you know, and have cooperative training exercises, yes, well, obviously we'll have to use that superhighway for military purposes too.
Thank you very much, Dr. Cuddy.
Thanks so much for calling, Jeannie. Appreciate your time here. You know, Dr. Cuddy, I hear all of this. There is this constant referral to socialism and the intellectual, the jurists, the educators. What makes socialism so appealing to people who seem to be so well educated? Do they think that if their plans are put through and they have an ideal situation, that they're not they're going to be exempt from all the hardship?
That's what I meant by a sort of training that goes on. I think the first work was by Edward Glaser, I think it was. I'm trying to remember, back in 1940, it's called Critical Thinking. They appeal to people's egos. Like kids, they'll say, oh, you're intelligent. You'll go into the special advanced class, you know, and the little youngster gets all, you know, excited about this and how they're special and smarter than everybody else. Same thing goes on a global scale. The paralete, as I call them, and ultimately there's an antichrist. Well, for the antichrist to come along, he's got to have a whole lot of people working under him. Well, you don't get that by telling them they're stupid, right? So you build each one of these people up in around the world in their own countries and say, you're exceptional, you're brilliant, you're wonderful, you know, we'll promote you, we'll see that you get to higher public office, you know, or you get a big salary or whatever, a CEO of a corporation, if you'll just, you know, go along with the plan here. And so they butter these people up. What they don't they don't tell them is what I put in a couple of my books, and that's a little cartoon from 1911. And it's a cartoon, the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, of Karl Marx. And under his arm is on Wall Street. He's standing there on Wall Street, and under his arm is a book, and it's not titled Communism. The book is titled Socialism. And all around him are the big shots. There's Rockefeller, Carnegie, J.P. Morgan. And they're saying, delighted. Now, you'd think that's a contradiction, but it's really not. The big shots really love socialism. Because under socialism, which means government ownership or control over major industries, you know, utilities, stuff like that, what happens is, since the big shots through financial contributions can almost buy politicians, they're beholden. The politicians have spend big bucks to get on TV and get elected. So they're beholden to these people. So once they get in office, the big shots call them up and say, you know, we put you in office and we can get you out, so you will do such and such. And so the politicians pass laws and rules and regulations which stymie competition against the big shots.
Mm-hmm.
And so the big shots really love socialism. In fact, John D. Rockefeller himself said competition's a sin. You know, he hated competition. Here he was in a supposedly free enterprise America, but he didn't like competition.
And if you ask them if they're for a one world order, even one of the Rockefellers had said, yes, I'm all for it. I'm well aware of what's going on, and I have no shame in my belief.
That's right. David Rockefeller, in his own book called Memoirs, published 2002, said, some believe he and his family, are part of a secret cabal conspiring against the best interests of the United States in order to bring about a more global political and economic structure, sort of one world. And he said, right after that, he said, if that's the charge, I stand guilty and I'm proud of it, end quote.
It's a strange thing to me that people who have been brought up in this country, who supposedly would have a world view that perhaps was consistent with those of the founding fathers, at least if you were born, say, in the mid or early part of the 20th century. I know I was raised up by my family to believe in the Bible, although I was not a Christian until a late period of time. But my father had a serious work ethic. He worked hard. He was successful. He brought us to different places in this country. And I always believed that that's what a person is supposed to do. So you're supposed to have allegiance to what's going on in your country. You're supposed to pledge allegiance to the flag and uphold and protect the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence. And these kinds of things are missing from our community now. And as we come back from the break, we're going to be just following up on that and bringing our conversation to a close. You know, Dr. Cuddy, all of the books that you've written are in the Radio Liberty resource list, the chronology of education and the cult of, or no, where is that other one? Covering up government spin or truth. They all have the same sort of thing. You must have early on been affected in some way to refocus your life's work in this direction. Is that true or what? What's going on there? What
sure.
happened?
I used to teach in schools, and I've done a lot of things, but I'm a curious sort, and I was, back in the 60s, I figured out, being groomed by these very people until I started questioning them, and they don't like to be questioned. You know, It's okay if you question other things, but not them. They're really not overt about things. They just close doors, and you're not facilitated. They choose other people who are more cooperative. And so I started doing a lot of research and collecting documents, private papers, and one thing leads to another. And what you were just talking about should have allegiance. One of the things I put in my books is a Philip Freneau from 1792 saying, look, here's the elite's plan to take over America. And one of them was they would lose wars. You say, why would a country want to lose wars? Well, the power elite wants to lose wars, like in Vietnam. After the Vietnam War had gone on for a while, they took a poll in the 70s. They found that after a while, only about 25% of those in their 20s, at 20 years of age, thought patriotism was a good value. In other words, through losing war, becoming disenchanted with a military effort, they would dampen the enthusiasm for a national patriotism. And that was important because if you're going to have a new allegiance to a world government, you can't have people being have allegiance to a particular nation, such as the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
So this is all part of the power elite, as I call them, their strategy.
We really do see it. Did you see the interview on television about a week ago or so where several young men in high school age were being asked whether or not they'd volunteer in the military, and most of them answered that query with, well, what's in it for me?
That's right. That's in the 70s, that was the slogan, what's in it for me, look out for number one. Those were all slogans that came out in the late 60s and 70s. It's all about me.
And it truly is. It goes right back to Genesis 3, doesn't it?
Right.
As Dr. Stan says, we are fighting a spiritual battle. Well,
absolutely.
Ephesians is very clear about that fact, that we're fighting a spiritual battle. And one of the quotes on your New Age Aquarian chart that was put together said, socialism is precisely the religion that must overwhelm Christianity. And fighting Christianity or being against Christ and the Bible, we really have open season on Christians right now. And as everybody joins us now for the final few minutes of this special edition of Radio Liberty, we'd like to ask Dr. Cuddy, just what can we do as citizens of these United States to protect that which our forefathers have given us? Dr. Cuddy, is there any specific kind of thing that a person just sitting and listening to the radio or on the web can do tomorrow to get things turned around for himself and his loved ones?
Well, that's my mother's chart. That's very good. You must pray first, listen to and contribute to Radio Liberty. But also, you have to start small, organize locally, letters to the editor, get a small group going, because the one thing they fear is information about what they're doing, and secondly, any lasting effort. They don't care about a temporary rally of some sort, but if they see that you're a group that's here to stay and you're going to impact them locally, you're not going away, that's where their recruitment is originally. They get people at the first stages and groom them all the way up to the presidency. So you have to start at the grassroots level. Don't worry about being small at first.
You know, people would say that if you believe in conspiracies, you're kind of off the deep end. Conspiracy, ladies and gentlemen, is a very good biblical word, as are the admonitions of Jesus Christ for our life, as are the admonitions of the Apostle Paul and all of the others who wrote in the New Testament. We must have an understanding of the God who loves us. We must have an understanding of the term righteousness. And Dr. Cuddy, I want to thank you so much for your work that you've been doing to lead people to an understanding of all kinds of different things, which is manifest out of your belief in Jesus Christ as your personal Savior. And until next time we talk, thank you very much and good evening.
Thanks for having me.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
You know, Dr. Cuddy has put his entire life to getting these things out. I want to remind you about this New Age chart. It can be found at News with Views, and you highlight Dr. Cuddy, go to the article, which is entitled America's New Religion, and you can print it out. It's a fascinating thing. It'll take you a half an hour to read it, but it gives you an idea of the manifold, pervasive nature of the battle that we seem to be waging here in these United States. It's so important that you help us get the word out. First of all, the word about the Lord Jesus Christ and how you must depend upon his finished work on the cross for your eternal security with God. And after that is accomplished, you'll find new freedom, a freedom and ability through the power of the Holy Spirit. He will empower you to begin to talk to your friends and neighbors and perhaps even children about what's truly going on in the world and how they can make a change for the better. First with Christ, then with the strength of the Holy Spirit in their lives to refute these lies that are coming out from the humanist side of things. I'd like for you, of course, to call 800-544-8927 and ask for a copy of the Radio Liberty Resource List. You can actually just call that same number and ask for all of Dr. Cuddy's books. That would be a great gift for somebody during this holiday season. 800-544-8927. We'd love to have you do that. Consider prayerfully becoming a member of the Radio Liberty family of supporters. Your $25 a month or more will get to you the tapes of the month, the CDs of the month, your choice. And you'll know that you're standing shoulder to shoulder with hundreds, if not thousands, of people who have decided that Radio Liberty's ministry is a ministry that's worthwhile. And I suggest that you take that to prayer this evening. Until that time, this is Dave Wilson. And as the Lord tarries, we'll be back again tomorrow. Keep Dr. Stan in your prayers. Keep our nation in your prayers. We thank you so much for listening. And listen to this. Oh.